Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
This feels like the calm before the storm of the NBA offseason. The draft coming up, free agency, you got trade rumors probably coming soon. Mm-hmm. So why not bring a guy who's super locked in? Fox 40's own, Sean Cunningham.
Yeah.
Hi, Sean.
Deuce and Mo. Hi, how are you?
We're good.
See you guys. Yeah, what? I look at, oh, thank you.
I said, we are good. You know what's so funny? I thought you said, how are you or something? And I just said, we are good. And then like that was very awkward. We were trying to finish each other.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said, I look good. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, you look good.
You look good. We are good.
I do need to shave. I got to cut this down.
No, you know, it's getting a little stop it. You're off-season scraggly.
This is just every day. You know, this is a standard Cunningham uniform. What's going on? I got the black polo. I got the Hurley hat. Let's go.
So I feel like this offseason with the Kings has been interesting. You had a Mike Brown extension, and the week before the extension, I thought like the franchise was relocating to a different country at one point, the way people were talking about it. But no, it's Sean, right? I mean, yeah. It got done, so they got that done. Then the news came about Sasha Vezenkov from overseas, where one person is saying that he's not returning to Sacramento, yeah. Which was interesting. Mm-hmm. Another one was like, oh, no, the Kings told him he's not in the plans. Well, you learned some stuff this week. Where do we stand right now with Sasha Vezenkov and his future in Sacramento?
I still think there's a little bit of confusion there. And I think the best way I can... after talking to a lot of people, it's probably best just to kind of rewind and look at those reports, because you're right. There was confusion not only about his future in Sacramento, but his future within the league. I mean, there was people speculating that he was ready to go back, pack it up and go back to Europe after 1 year. And so when you see some of those reports, like I'm looking at it like, okay, this shouldn't be hard to get people to talk about, particularly both, you know, I think within the organization, both from agencies, both from Team Vezenkov, I mean, somebody's going to come out and either say, yes, this is true, or no, this is not true, especially if it's not true. I think they'd want to get ahead of it really soon. And that there were crickets for like days. And that was a little concerning, because that makes me think that, oh, there might be some truth to this. But I think all you have to do is really rewind back to what he said in his exit interviews, and you guys were both there. And he, I thought, was very candid. And they were comments that were both pretty consistent with what he had said. And if you had talked to him in weeks leading up to the end of the season, you know, just kind of disappointment, kind of wishing he had more minutes and really just wanting to play. I think he factors in the injury, but at the end of the day, he's looking at it like, man, I wish my role was a little bit different. I wish this year had gone different. And certainly you can understand that because everybody wants to play.
Yeah.
But then you fast forward to this and it's like, oh no, his future with the Kings is in doubt. And I think, you know, after talking to a lot of people, I almost didn't go with the report until I got one source that was much more closer to him. And that was the definitive part where I said, no, he's going to honor his contract. Now, honor his contract is if push meets shove, he's going to be playing in the NBA. If he truly wants to go to Europe, I think there are ways and mechanisms in place for him to do that, but I don't see that happening, right? So what's that mean for his future with the Kings? Well, whether it's with the Kings or anybody else, he just wants to play. And I part of my tweet there, and I think some people may have been confused by it, but whether it's in Sacramento or he makes a decision to force a trade or the Kings just say, you know what, we soured on you after this 1 year, which I don't necessarily think is true. We look at you in a different light and we're going to try to shop you. Wherever he's trying to go, he just wants to play. And I don't know that heavy rotational minutes are in the cards in other situations, especially ones that are win now situations. So, it'll be interesting to see, like, are his days numbered in Sacramento? Possibly. And I think there are still fans with him in the organization. There are fans with him within the organization, within the coaching staff. But I think you have to factor in the disappointment of just the injuries and what they and how those play a toll. I mean, the guy missed like 9 weeks of the season practically. And so it's just a long-winded way of saying, like, I don't think much has changed, at least from things that I've talked about. And I still think that, yeah, you can still like a guy and still look at shopping him because you're trying to make your team better. I mean, I point all the time, like, they traded Tyrese Halliburton. Like, nobody is untouchable. Yeah. Right. So you're untouchable until you're not. And if there's a move out there that makes the team better, they won't hesitate in moving him. And I think he's got a very team friendly contract for wherever he goes. And this year, Mike Brown talked about it a lot. It's like that Manu Ginobili first year when he was with the Spurs. It was kind of a big learning curve. There was a lot of stuff he had to get used to, both not only here in America, but just within the NBA game. So when you factor in injuries and when you factor in, you know, the win now mentality that they had, that's a learn by fire, trial by fire kind of situation for him. So I think he wishes it had gone differently, but that's the beauty of having a three-year contract with a team option on that third year. Next year, they might have a bigger role for you or the expectations might change.
Like, even if the situation isn't here in Sacramento, I just feel like his identity as a player being a sharpshooter, he can, you know, quick release, shoot the ball. That alone in the NBA, there's value to it. And I felt like the times before the injuries that you kind of mentioned, it was, you saw this flow that he was kind of gaining. Like, he was starting to understand the flow of the NBA game and feeling a little bit more comfortable. Injury happens again. Injury, you know, and then not really being able to find a spot within the rotation with the Sacramento Kings. Like, it made sense, too, because of what they were pushing for there at the end. But I look around the NBA and I go, there's got to be a lot of value still to him being a shooter. Have you heard anything about people and how they feel about him around the league?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think there's a lot of intrigue. I think the first year does make people a little cold to wanting to welcome him into the to a winning situation right away. Like, I don't think anyone's looking at Sasha Vezenkov and going, oh, that guy puts us over the top, right?
Yeah.
So I think you're looking at teams that are on this, that have room for him, that might be looking to for a little bit of a push, and they might be able to think that he can help in to a lesser extent on maybe a losing team or a team that might be looking to be on the rise a little bit. But I don't think a team like, let's say, you're Memphis all of a sudden, although it's kind of funny, I actually think he would be a good fit on Memphis, but, you know, they're all of a sudden trying to have Ja Morant back. They'll have a lot of, you know, this hype surrounding them to try to replicate what they did just 2 years ago. You know, obviously going through a season where it's completely disappointing and Ja Morant is out and it totally disrupts everything that they do. If you're Memphis, you're looking at next year going, we can get right back into that top five in the West. And whether I agree with that or not, like, I do feel that that's a team that's going to need a push. And certainly shooting is at the top of the list for them. So, a long-winded way to say, I think you're right, but also another way of looking at it too is with his disappointment around the injury. And I remember talking to him several times in while he was dealing with this injury, never really thinking on the ankle injuries that he would be out as long as he was. And I think that what he had to really remember is like, hey, in Europe, you're not playing every day. You know, you've got days off in between your schedule, and team would be more likely to say, oh, you've got 2 days rest, 3 days rest here, maybe a practice, and then here you go. Whereas here in the NBA, you've got to deal with 3 games in 4 nights, back-to-backs, travel. And if you look at one of the stretches in March, I mean, it was pretty brutal. And they didn't even have, I think they had one practice in like a 2.5 week period. So it was harder for him to get back on the floor. And then, and when he first started, you know, that season last year, I had legit heard talk about him going to G League and, you know, learning, just getting the nuances of the game. But what was interesting too, and I think this has been consistent, if you guys, I mean, you guys obviously remember Nemias Keita, his first year in the NBA, I was thinking, man, it's kind of a disservice. He didn't go to the G League at all until, you know, as much as he probably should have, but they kept him around the culture of the NBA. So practices and shoot arounds, those became like game days for him. And it certainly worked, you know, he took a bigger step with the G League in his next year. Not that Sasha would go there as a 28-year-old, but keeping him around the team's culture, I think, is paramount for him. And I think it did pay off. I think, like you mentioned, Morgan, I think you see a lot of glimmers of, oh, we know why they like this guy. He's mm-hmm. shown improvement, particularly in that second half of the season. Then all of a sudden he has another setback. So if you're a team out there, I can absolutely buy the fact that there's a market for him. I just don't know what it looks like and what the situation looks like and if it's going to be enough for him to want to buy in.
And just watching him last year, and you start thinking about the Kings roster as a whole, they just need more athleticism. You know, when you have Harrison Barnes, who, you know, struggles defending guys at his spot at times, and, you know, Trey Lyles, these guys can do some nice things offensively, but defensively, just from an athleticism standpoint, you're watching the teams in the playoffs, like, they have all these athletes. They're switchable. They've got length. And the Kings lack that. So even if you think Sasha could help you, you have to just look at the rest of their roster and go, okay, where does he fit? Where does HB fit? Where do all these guys fit? Because it's clear the Kings need more length and athleticism.
Yeah, 100%. You've got guys that are almost replicate, you know, of each other. You know, I've talked about how, you know, I think coming into last season, you look at Keegan Murray and Harrison Barnes, and I think there's some people like, well, why did they bring back Harrison if Keegan looked ready to go? And they ultimately kind of do the same thing in a lot of different facets of their game, or at least serve a similar role in the starting five. And I've always kind of said it as I had kind of learned a little bit. It's like, well, there's no guarantee that Keegan takes that step forward in the second year. Some guys regress in their second year. And clearly, if you're a Kings fan, you've seen that happen with rookies that have come throughout the years. But that didn't happen. You know, Keegan did take a step forward. It might not have been the dramatic step forward that some people would like. And that's kind of, you know, my belief coming into the offseason last year. I was kind of saying, you know, if he can just replicate his rookie year, that'll go a long way because he was so impactful that rookie season. And I think he did take a dramatic step with the defense that he had. And to your point, Deuce, that length, that defense, if you're watching the playoffs, you know, I believe the Kings could have been a competitive team against a number of these teams in the playoffs. I don't know that I would have picked them to win, but you can clearly see the difference, right? And especially from the, you know, I think they're learning to play physical. I think they're learning to be a better defensive team. And I think they're capable of being that fast paced offensive team that you see. But in these playoffs, there's such a microscope on each series to where you can really see the nuances and the things that this team lack. And to me, I think you hit it. There's a lot of guys that kind of do the same thing, and you don't have that break glass in case of emergency, or even that hockey goon out there that can really help will this team. I mean, you hear that term dog a lot. And I think it was kind of brought to the surface a little bit with the passing of Jerry West and those comments. He says, I'm not a dog, I'm a wolf, right?
I eat dogs. Yeah,
I eat dogs. And it's funny because it's like, that's just like when you think of competitive nature in the NBA, it just shows how different the league is today. But I feel like you really see it amplified in the playoffs. You can't just totally go through the motions. And every round just has this added something to it, to where the, you know, these guys are, you kind of want to, you do what you do, you still have your identity, but you're going to be put in situations that are just different. And you can tell that those are things that the Kings really kind of lacked. Like I kind of, can you imagine if they'd gone up against Minnesota, who they did play pretty well? I think you would see a much different result in that series. And I also think that, you know, look at Dallas. I mean, Dallas has played well, and I think they really got hot towards the end of the season, but they look like a completely different team than, I mean, those two games in Sacramento, and they were competitive. They were fun games before the end of the season, but that didn't look like the same Dallas team that you saw before the trade deadline. And you can certainly say, oh, okay, yeah, they added Daniel Gafford and they had PJ Washington and Derek Lively has taken another step. So guys like that have really taken a step forward, but even Luka, you know, just been incredible. Yep. So it's interesting, man. There's a gap there. There's a huge divide between what the Kings would like to be and what they currently are.
And it's hard to pinpoint just like one thing to improve on, because, you know, I think they took some strides defensively, especially once Keon was in the starting lab. I thought Fox was really good defensively. Mm-hmm. There are some nights I felt like maybe against guards that aren't to his caliber that maybe he wasn't super focused in on at times.
Sure.
But when he was locked in, he brought it. I thought Keegan did a great job defensively. Keon, Sabonis, he has limitations, but he plays hard. But come playoff time, like, these teams are hunting. And I feel like the Kings, as they're constructed right now, they've got too many guys that you can hunt.
Yeah.
Sabonis, they'll try to hunt him. Herder, right?
HB.
So it just, and then you go to your bench, and that's what's so challenging. Where you look at it, and this is the extreme, Boston. Well, yeah, you may hunt someone, but it's still not terrible. Like, I'm going to go after Horford a little bit, or Luka's going to try to go at Tatum a little bit. They don't have a ton of weaknesses.
But it's kind of like what Sean was even saying. Like, at that level, it's definitely also a mix of individual talent plus a different mentality. I mean, a different type of discipline from an entire team, from an individual that is willing and wanting to play that same type of defensive effort night in and night out.
Yeah, I also think, I go, they're not that far away. They won 46 games. Right. I think there were some good things you saw last year. But what became apparent after Monk went down, and I think Herter's injury hurt as well, like, the shot creation, it was De'Aaron. And so as we go into this offseason, one of the biggest questions is just, you know, Malik Monk's future in Sacramento. Will another team offer him a ton of money and then he'll just dip out? As it stands right now, what do you think about the Malik Monk situation? Do you still think there's a chance he could return, or do you think it's more likely he departs?
I mean, I think they're prepared for anything. I think, I mean, that's the beauty of his situation, right? It's like, you knew when the season ended how much you're like, what you can offer. They know what you can offer. Like, it's not like you can turn over this card and go, but what about this? Right? Like they know, and it's really incumbent of I think they're prepared to make him to give him that offer that they can give the 4 years at 78, and maybe you've got to opt out after two, and you know, however that looks. But the reality is it's almost like restricted free agency in a way, only you don't really get a chance to keep your guy. It's like, if the other teams come in higher, or if some of the teams with cap room can present they're the ones that have to lure Malik Monk away, and they've got the pockets to do it. They've got the cap room to do it. And the Kings just have those handcuffs on where it's like, this is what we can give. We've got a great situation. You love living here. You've got a lot of relationships. You've had the best seasons of your life. And I think Malik knows that, you know, and I think it was fun, man. Like, I was out at a couple weeks ago, there was an autograph show that came to the area. Like Dennis Rodman out there with a tattoo on his face with these jewels and stuff. Like, that was
amazing.
Wild. But Malik was right after him. And there was a lot of people there to see him, as you can imagine. I mean, this guy's like a Kings fan favorite, and everyone coming up just like, we want you to stay. And he's hearing all this stuff, and he's you know, smiling, he's saying the right things. He's like, facts, I want to be back. He wants to be back.
Yeah.
You know, these are all good things. We all know this. I mean, we heard in the exit interview, I mean, he doesn't really shy away from wanting to be here, but the reality is, like, he's got to go and take care of himself. And if that means a different situation, I think he's prepared to do so. But if you're the Kings, I mean, from day one, they know everyone's cards are on the table when it comes to the Kings, and it's just a matter of whether or not you say, yeah, we want to give you that what we can, and it's up for him to stay. And you know, I kind of talked to Domas the other day for a separate story, and he had that same energy where he's like, yeah, if he leaves, I'm sick of him. I don't want to see him again. And he's joking, but he's just like, he's trying to be coy, but it's literally like, you know, the press is on, everyone's talking to him, you know, they're in his ear trying to keep him to come back. But the reality is too, they all respect the fact that he can go out there and kind of change his life a little bit. And,
yep.
You know, a lot of people look at it and go, oh, what's the difference between 78 and potentially 90, 84, whatever it looks like. And it's like a lot, especially when you live in California, you all know. So,
yeah.
Doesn't matter how much money you make, you're going to know what that feels like. So
no.
If you can go and improve your situation, he's got to do it.
And that's why I love that, like, that his teammates and people do respect, like, it's a business at the end of the day, you know, and you just never know what can happen in this league, and especially in a sport where it's so physical. I mean, look what just happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of it, toward the end of this season. So understand that. But I guess now, from an on the court situation, you know, you say that the Kings are prepared for anything to happen. I mean, is that when you take a look at the draft and you go, okay, they're going to make are they making a decision based on what could happen, or how do you think they're necessarily going about that?
Well, I think they're prepared if they have to move on from Malik. I think they have identified things that they would like to target and have conversations about. But I think Kings don't necessarily want to show their hand unless they have already been told that, no, you know, Malik isn't coming back. When it comes to the draft particularly, though, I think we could just talk about 13 as opposed to the second round pick. But holding 13 in the draft, it's like, what is the value of that pick, particularly this year? And the good news is, it's not necessarily about 13, because they have other draft picks that they can, I mean, they have all their picks really, with the exception of what goes to Atlanta potentially next year. But we saw last year how they were able to draft a player for another team in Maxence Prosper and send him to Dallas and unload money for which was Rashawn Holmes's contract. So you're only really, You have all your picks. It's like, what will the value of 13 be? And I do expect them to be very, very aggressive in looking at shopping this pick, potentially even moving up in this draft for something that they might identify that can help them right away. But you have to leave uncover every stone and figure out what is available to you. And I think they've had those conversations. I think they've had, they're prepared to make the pick at 13. They're prepared to drop back. They're prepared to move up. But when you weigh all of what you can possibly get for those picks, it may not be to your liking. So the reality is, you have to be prepared to draft it. You also have to be prepared to say, okay, well, what if you're taking 13 and a future first or whatever that looks like and moving it on? They have to make the right play. And I think making that move with Malik in their future is certainly a lot much more of a nirvana than having to turn around and make a move to replace Malik Monk and then find those pieces that you still need, because that makes life a lot harder considering just how pressed up against the cap you are.
I'm very curious to see who the real threats are for Malik, because we always tie him to like the team. We go, hey, Orlando, they got some space. They have a need. Right. You know, he's been tied. San Antonio has been mentioned. But I don't necessarily think we know for a fact that these teams would be interested in Malik. I'm sure they would have some level of interest, but what are they willing to pay? I wonder, like, would Philly be a threat? And I know Maxey's there, but they've got so much cap space. And like, if you
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah. They're the ones that I've identified. Yeah. I've talked about it for weeks. I said, don't sleep on Philly. And I think Philly, it's funny because I think Philly has an ecosystem where you have maybe two or three different scenarios. I think they're big game hunting for sure. You know, I think they're looking at trying to land something large.
Paul George.
Right. And if you, and what does that look like? You know, can you still have a lot of money there, but you know, having Paul George as opposed to maybe making a trade with another team like the Knicks. I think, you know, Embiid's been rumored to the Knicks forever, right? Like, I mean, that's just, everyone seems to speculate that that's eventually going to happen. I don't think that happens this year, but whatever. Like, let's just say you go coveted free agents or you make a significant splash. I think Malik is such the type that he can almost adapt to any situation, mm-hmm. you know, having that playmaking ability, having that energy that he brings. And I, you know, it's funny. He may not say this as much. I know he did when he first got here, but this, him growing as a basketball player and as a professional and understanding different nuances of the game and how he can impact the game from just playing with LeBron, I think was paramount for him. And obviously hit the swagger that he brings. It didn't happen so much with LA. I mean, certainly LeBron was hurt for a good period of time where he flourished. But his, what he does to a team impacts the Kings, especially so much. It gives them an identity and they feed off of it. And I honestly feel that the way Joel Embiid is and the way Tyrese Maxey is from a chemistry standpoint, I think he'd fit in beautifully there. So it's just depending upon what that makeup of that team looks like. And can he have that same type of impact on a team, particularly when it comes to that chemistry? Because I think that's so valuable. And you already know what he is as a playmaker. And you know, we've seen it. Embiid's looking for help all over the place. And that's what's been allowed guys like Maxey to shine.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
My last one for you, just as we head into the off season and it gets busy, is how aggressive do you think they're going to be? I guess the Kings would argue, well, we're always aggressive. We're always searching for these deals, but how likely do you think it is that they will actually get something pretty significant done, or will there be a serious makeover with this squad?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at what they did last season and clearly, and even at the trade deadline and their lack of movement there, anything is going to be more dramatic than those two things, right? I mean, we're going back to Sasha. I mean, he was really, him and Duarte were kind of the big fish that they landed. I would argue that.
I know.
Sorry. You said big fish and it made me laugh.
But I get it. I get it. Go on. Yeah.
I mean, I would argue that the Sabonis move and locking him up was honestly their move, right?
Yeah. You know what? And I think that does often get overlooked, because if you think about what if they didn't get that done? Like, imagine the noise going into this offseason about him. Is he staying?
Yeah.
And then you would have Mike Brown thing too.
Oh, God.
It'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, and sprinkle in Sasha as well, right? Yeah. Like, you've got all kinds of chaos at that point. No, I think, look, I think that certainly any movement will be better. I think they could argue that they could bring in a piece or two, maybe make, you know, three or four moves, ultimately changing up the makeup. My whole thing is, and I think this is where a lot of fans are at, is you know, you kind of have your long-term guys like Fox, Domas. You could throw Kevin Huerter in there to a degree because he has a longer contract, even though he's likely going to be shopped. Keegan Murray, certainly with where he's at in the situation, but that's not necessarily a three-headed monster, right? And I think you need somebody. This is kind of going back to the Pascal Siakam conversation when he was at the trade deadline. Like, I think that's the type of player that they need. They need a big time scorer. They need
Brandon Ingram, Sean.
Oh my God.
Right. I'm all, you know me, I'm all for that.
I am so in on Brandon Ingram. I don't know. Like, I know his contract's coming up. That Well, because I just wonder how really I feel like the Pelicans are going to try to shake some stuff up for the for sure, and he could be available.
Yeah, I'm with you, and you know, he adds length. You get that type of scoring mentality. You give Domas some help. I mean, he's obviously a good shooter, and he can get to the rim. There's some concerns about injury, but that's the type of player, that's the type of move that I feel that they are in position to make. Now, does it have to happen this offseason? No. You can build some things around it. You can still answer some questions that you might have, answer some things you might have some questions about, and maybe it turns different towards the trade deadline, and maybe the asking price isn't as high. I understand that, but ultimately, whether it happens in the offseason or if it happens at some point during this next calendar year, so to speak, of the NBA, that's to me the move you have to make. And you know, if you have to build around Fox and Domas, and you've got obviously a whole bunch of things that you're wanting to hold on to, but for the right asking price, and I'm not just talking about Keegan Murray, I'm talking about Kevin Huerter, I'm talking about Davion Mitchell. I mean, you've got it. You know what your team is, and there shouldn't be many unanswered questions at this point. I mean, they ran it back, and they legit ran it back. It's 2 wins different, and you fell all the way to 9th. The landscape of the NBA changes by the day. I like to say that a lot. And clearly this season, especially with, I mean, we've talked about it, man, like look at these finals, and I've said it for the entire season, but I think I really believed it in January. Like, it's not just the Celtics are the best team in the league. They are heads and tails above everybody else. I don't think, I think there's the Celtics. You could argue maybe there's the, you know, the Nuggets a little bit or whatever, but to me it's the Celtics and everybody else. Like, nobody else is in that class.
Hang on 1 second. We're gonna kill a dog for a second. That's just barking nonstop. Okay.
I didn't even hear it.
So it's fine. Great. It got to a point where it's like, okay, it's been happening for too long, so we're gonna stop it.
Okay.
How are
the dogs doing, by the way?
They're great. Well, Carlin is he's the same. He just can't move.
Okay.
I mean, he can move, but not his back legs. And he's happy. He's not in pain, and he's rolling around like an idiot. And then, you know, Bojack is just screaming like crazy. Like,
what a dick.
Yeah, look at this thing.
Look at this one.
Like, look at this thing. Hey.
Yeah.
You talk basketball right now.
Right now.
I mean, so sorry about that.
Anyway, you're talking about how the Celtics
dogs are phenomenal.
The Celtics are clearly ahead of, you know, everybody else in the NBA right now. And the West is super challenging. You have to look at, okay, San Antonio should be better next year. Like, what kind of moves they make? What's Victor's impact year two? Houston took steps. What do they look like this year? You already mentioned Memphis. Now, there's other teams that could drop off too. Who the hell knows what's going on with Golden State? You know, the Lakers, the Clippers, there are questions too, but I still think the Kings aren't far away from like being a legit playoff team. And that's how fragile it is. Like, you know, if they got in this year, could they have won a first round series? Maybe it's all about matchups, but I think it is imperative for this front office to make something happen. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Brandon Ingram, but upgrading some spots could make a world of difference. I think Keegan's got to take an offensive step this year, work on expanding his game. And you have to maximize Fox and Sabonis's kind of prime years at this point.
But, and also, Sean, I think whenever Deuce and I talk about this too, I mean, it's the same thing that you said with like Chris Duarte and JaVale McGee. It was like, I understood the idea surrounding them and the, Chris Duarte played well his rookie year with Sabonis. Oh, JaVale McGee, like, you know, can he be that length that you need around the rim behind Sabonis? Like, I understand the idea. You just can't. I feel like you're now at the point where you can't miss because of where Domas and De'Aaron are in their careers.
No, I agree with both what you said. I think that's kind of the point I was getting to, is you have the Celtics and then there's everyone else, in my opinion, right? And the parity that which just shows you that it's that are far and away in terms of, you know, you ran it back, got 2 wins different, but it was dramatic. You went from 3 to 9th, right? That's my point. Like, it while it looks insurmountable, it looks like there's not that much difference, in my opinion. And to me, it should make them more aggressive, that there's so much parity and this thing is wide open, especially in the West, where you could really, you know, you know what it's going to take to get your guys positioned well. And a step like that, an Ingram, a three moves that make you a little bit more of a physical team or a longer team, or give, in my mind, it's all about getting Domas help, right? Because he, look, he's one of the most talented players in the league and what he does, especially in the modern NBA, but can he be your best player? Do you, you still have to have a guy who can just go get you a bucket, right?
Yep.
And Domas is such that he feeds everybody. Like, everyone has career years when they go and play with Domas. They love playing with the guy. He shares the ball. He's, you know, we're always telling he should probably score more. He should probably do maybe a little bit more. And I only say that because that's how you identify this team getting better. You've got guys that are feeding off it, but it's like, man, if he was only like a, did this just a little bit more. It's like, at the end of the day, he is what he is, and he's a great basketball player. And that's why he gets a lot of the criticisms that he gets, is because people want to see more. They're like, you're so talented, you're so dominant, you can do all these things. But at the end of the day, if you put a spotlight on him, it's like, you know, like, he needs everyone around him, right?
I agree.
And you have to find the right those right pieces around him. And to your point again, going back to Ingram, like, he would flourish around him. I mean, I think, you know, everyone talks about playing in Sacramento and how, you know, Sacramento, obviously small market, and it's California, and it's not, you're in California, but you don't get the LA spotlight and all that kind of stuff. We get it, right? But at the same time, playing with a guy like Sabonis is incredibly attractive to a lot of players and guys who can come in here and have career years and then position themselves for a potential payday. And all you have to do is look at Malik Monk. Like, you know, the two of those guys had, in my opinion, for better part of the 2 years that they played together, some of the best two-man game in the NBA. And now Malik is in a position to get an ultimate payday. You know, you saw what he unlocked in Fox. Like, Fox was already a good player. He became a great player because of Domantas Sabonis, in my opinion. You know, he has another guy that can take that pressure off him and allow him to really flourish in a system around him. Then you space him out with some shooting. Like, no wonder they had the offensive firepower they did in that first year. You take a little bit of a back seat this year. Can you get back to a little bit more? It doesn't have to be number one, but can you get back to playing with that level of firepower? And I think they can. I mean, you look at this year. I mean, free throws, three-point shooting. I mean, it just wasn't what it was in the first year.
Yeah. The regression from, you know, Herter and even Keegan from the three-point shooting. You know, and Fox just took a lot more. You know, he didn't put as much pressure on the rim at times. Part of that is because those other guys aren't knocking down shots and they're packing the paint. So, but,
and also, you guys, health and injuries, like, screwed with the flow of, you know, like, you look at a team again, like the Celtics, and the amount of depth, mm-hmm. and that they have this identity and this strategy as a team where they can go next man up, next man up. The Kings, it was like a drop off, not even necessarily because the individual was like a certain tier of basketball player. It just, I mean, it's just one of the best leagues in the world, and you have to make sure you don't have that type of drop off with the type of identity that you're trying to play with as an organization.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to find those guys that are going to be two-way players. And I think they've, you know, it's easier said than done, but, you know, and you compare them to a team like the Celtics, which they probably shouldn't because, again, they're an anomaly, but they've got two-way players all throughout their roster. So it's wild.
Do you think it's too much to ask to have Sabonis take like four threes a game next year?
Yeah, probably. I just don't think they'll be, I just don't think they'll have that in their makeup. I don't know that he'll, I think this year certainly gives him a confidence. I know he's still working on it. Playing in the Lithuanian national team, they've got to go and qualify for the Olympics. But if he can take the qualifying, and if somehow they win their group and they can make the Olympics, he won't be asked to play that type of role. I don't think you'll see him shoot threes in any of the international competition. But I feel like coming off of that and adding some of the tools that he's added to his game over the last season, and seeing some of the, you know, people leave him out on the island and he takes a shot, I feel like there should be a confidence there. And I feel like even if it's, whether it's the 3-point line or if it's even that top of the key right there where you could just do the Chris Webber shot, free throw extended, and nail it. I think that that's probably where his game should gravitate towards, or at least evolve to, in some of these years to come. Maybe this will be the first of it, because we've seen a lot where people leave him on the island and he's exposed and he doesn't get the motion around him and he's just holding the basketball. So, yeah, I don't know that I'd expect it, but certainly it would be a welcome sight.
See, and that's the thing with him. You're right. The long mid-range shot. I mean, he took more mid-range. I think it was a career high in mid-range, but most of them were like 4 to 14 feet away, not that like free throw line extended one. And you think of someone like Al Horford, and like he went from not being a three-point shooter to turning into one, or Brooke Lopez. And obviously Sabonis is such a force inside at times, but I just think about when teams are leaving him. And if he can just have that confidence to just launch it, do not hesitate it from 20 feet, from three-point land, he can knock it down. He just doesn't take it.
It's funny, in talking to him the other day, and it kind of apropos that here we are on Saturday before Father's Day as we record this, it's like it was a Father's Day feel good. Like, and it didn't, you know, Deuce, you and I are a lot alike when it comes to our fathers, and you know, kind of out of, we don't have them in our lives kind of a thing. Yeah, so it didn't dawn on me until someone really like hit me over the head with a hammer, and they're like, no, it was like Father's Day's on Sunday, and here we are talking about our Vitas.
Yeah.
Him getting the number from 10 to 11 to honor his father, you know, what that number means, not only for his father and his family. His name's his daughter, 11. She's born on July 11th of last year. This really kind of cool scenario, right?
Her name's 11?
Yeah.
So cute.
11. Wow. Yeah.
So cute.
No, didn't hear my interview. Cool. But the...
Ooh, go ahead. No, you're fine. We listen to everything you do, Sean, but didn't you're hear fine. The interview, though.
Not yet.
You're fine.
We have 11 but in that, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, in that interview, though, what was fun for me, because, you know, he comes to Sacramento, and what's the first thing you do as a journalist? You're like, oh, we got to talk about your father, right? He never had, like, this joy of talking about him, and it's probably because he's had to talk about his dad his entire life.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I'm my own guy, blah blah blah. So it was most fun I've had talking to him about his father, because he was playing the role, he was having fun with it. But it was this moment of him, it's like, you know, I run into people who don't remember, you know, Charles Barkley as a player, and they just think of him as this media member, right? Or an analyst, and they don't remember him, what he was as a player. I imagine there's a ton of people that have no idea what his dad was like. And his dad was as literal, still is. I mean, he's a 7'3" humongous person.
Massive
and
head.
As a basketball, yeah, massive. And his head is enormous, yeah, too, by the way. That's one of the things that strike me. I go, I didn't think a human head could get that.
Yeah,
anyway, to see him do his skill set, yes, he's a slower guy, but like, his skill set would fit the modern day NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, he extended the floor. He was a force down low. He had the crazy passes, and Domas has crazy passes. He's like, no, he did it like 20 times a game. I might get a fancy pass one every whatever. He's like, but he did it all the time. So I literally asked him, I was like, who's better? Like, I know eras are different. And he goes, there's no way I'll ever be as good as my dad.
Wow.
And I think part of that is because of how he extended the floor. He could shoot the three. He could do it consistently. You had to respect. He could draw the center. And back in the day, a center was as big as Shaq and Alonzo Mourning and, you know, Patrick Ewing and those types of guys. You can draw those guys out to the perimeter. And if you do, even a slow guy like Arvydas Sabonis can go by you or dish it off with some crazy fancy pass. And he just dazzled people. And people forget, like, he came to the NBA when he was 30 and still had a, he still made the Hall of Fame, but it's mainly because what he did internationally. But he was that dude was amazing to watch. So hearing Domas talk about his father that way was enlightening. It was fun. And yeah, it just happened to coincide with Father's Day weekend. So it was kind of one of those Father's Day feel goods.
You mentioned him changing his number to 11. I think I'm to the point now, no more retiring of jerseys.
Because, okay, because mean, this, you're this to that point. You've been to that point.
Bob There's, Davies, you know, that was his number. They got permission from the family. Forever. No, it's just like, obviously, the Warriors don't need to sign 30 for when Steph retires. Like, we're not going to sign it. You don't know when else gets to wear. Okay. But like, at this point, just, you could still hang the number in the rafters. You could still do like a Ring of Honor thing, but who gets just a number? But let these guys wear what they want.
I think you're onto something. I think it just means something different for each individual team. And like if you're the Lakers, right? And majority of your retired numbers have come from the Los Angeles days and not the Minneapolis days. You have a ton of numbers up in the rafters, like a silly amount, but you've won so many championships. So it's harder for a team like them. Think of how many numbers are retired in the Sacramento era. You're doing just fine
because
you haven't had many winning seasons. Now, again, a lot of your numbers have come from, I mean, the Kings have gone from, you know, Rochester, Omaha, Kansas City. Now you're in Sacramento. I'm forgetting Cincinnati. I mean, that's ridiculous. So I think it just means something to each individual team. And really, when you break it down, and I don't mean to be rude to some of the players that have their numbers retired, you can make an argument. In the Sacramento era, it should only be Chris Webber and Mitch Richmond, and that's it.
Ooh, ooh,
Ooh, right?
Ooh, he said it out loud. Yeah, I mean,
here's my rule on jersey retirements, as if you're going to allow them. It's people try to like, oh, you have to win a championship, or you have to be a Hall of Famer, you have to have all these rules. It's like, no, I think it just, if the player matters, if the fans vibe, who cares? But let's be honest, when the Kings retired, like Peja and Vlade, and Weber, wasn't it like the same season, and it was during like a terrible yeah. year, and you know the Blues were trying to get people to come to games, and that was one way to do it.
Yeah, it was like, we know we missed that shit too. Like, what else?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, and some if you keep retiring numbers, you're just gonna have to people are gonna have to go to letters, and then that'll just be weird, and we don't need to do that, right?
You just find different ways to honor them. And like you said, is it a ring of honor? Can you build a statue? You know, I think with the Sanford Giant Deuce here, I think we're all Giants fans, but forget Morgan. Like, the Giants have a really cool thing. They do retire numbers, but there's not many of them. They do have a wall of fame, you know, getting up on there, and that's the way they honor their players too. Obviously, there's some people who have statues at Oracle Park, but yeah, every team's different in how they do it. And yeah, you might run out of numbers one day, but it's fun. I think you can, you know, you get to a point where it's like, you know what? Just because we retired the number doesn't mean we can't bring it back.
And
instance like Bob Davies. Or, you know what? Sorry, Sam Lacy, let's take your number away. We're no longer, we're going to honor you in a different way.
Exactly. Well, Sean, thanks for taking some time. Talk some Kings offseason. Yeah. I'm excited to see what happens the next few weeks. Got the draft. We got free agency, California Classic, Vegas.
Oh, we got it all.
Are you guys hanging out in Vegas with me this year?
Because with you in Vegas, wait, it's just
taste
like,
of it last year.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Wait, did I hang out?
I did. We got drinks at the Chandelier Bar at Aria.
Wow.
Deuce was a trooper. Morgan was
getting pizza.
She was in that pizza. The
yeah,
stupid
I was
pizza
in a
line.
Pizza line for 2 hours. Yeah. Like, let a girl eat.
We have different ways we experience Vegas. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, we do. Yes,
Sean. Sean's
do.
Like, here's this flower that makes your tongue numb, and then take the drink. It's like, okay. That's what he does all day. Let me chew on this goddamn flower, guys.
Yeah, he doesn't even do work. That's all he does is just chew on this flower.
It's so good. So dumb. It's so good. The verbena at the Chandelier Bar.
We'll get one together this year, Sean.
Yeah.
They need to have that elsewhere. I wouldn't trust it anywhere else, I don't think. But
I think Makuni used to have one in Roseville, actually, because I've had this drink before, and I believe it was at Makuni in Roseville. But this was years and years ago, and I know exactly what it is, and I remember it making my tongue numb, and I was like, whoa, that's cool.
It is really good.
And then I turned into Sean Cunningham, and it was so weird. Yeah.
Shout out Chuck Hayes, who thought I poisoned him one time. He was there.
And you do that to the wrong person. Like, what did you just do to me?
I gave him a heads up. I said, this is going to taste different, but I didn't mean to name drop. But, you know, Chuck is one of the funniest. I've seen two people that had funny experiences at that bar. One of them happened to be Chuck Hayes. And another one, if you know Vegas, has an element around them that's always trying to proposition people like me, and they come up and I said, you know what, I'm flattered, but you know, why don't I buy you a drink? And so I bought her that drink, and she thought I drugged her, and she ran off. So
that's the best way to get someone away from you, huh?
We're gonna have to do a post summer league edition of this podcast Sean, where we just hear his stories of trying to hand random people
some numbing drink.
He just has a bag of flowers. You want one?
No, creep, man. This is...
All right, Sean. Appreciate you, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
Love you guys. Thanks.
Yep. The one and only Sean Cunningham.
Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.